Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy Lou.
Here we go. We're going to talk about
your official southern name.
Actually. That's where it came from.
Cindy Lou. So barbecue.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Because people care about barbecue.
Of course they do.
In some reason, everyone thinks that they're an expert on barbecue. They've watched it on some television program or whatever. So what is the origin of barbecue? Why would people, you know, and it's in a lot of cultures, but it's nowhere where it's not hot, right?
Right. No, you know, it's old way of cooking. It's in a pit in the ground and, you know, cover it up or, you know, let a hog sit in the ground or beef, actually, in the ground for hours. I mean, that's just an old way of cooking.
Or beef.
Yeah.
No Southern it would
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, no, my dad Southern, used to do that in
dad,
New York.
Your dad's from Pennsylvania. Okay.
Yeah, they used to do that
that's
for parties.
Not, yeah, that's not a Southern.
All right,
it's
still barbecue. And I think, actually, that's a point, which is it isn't just Southern barbecue. Everybody has a way of cooking that way, like you said already.
Many years ago at the restaurant Savannah, I gave a quiz to a number of the staff and the service staff in the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, you know, one of the questions was, what are the three most important elements of Southern food? And this fellow, Doug Prunkle.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Prunkle, I'm calling you out because he answered on the quiz.
He
did not have the answers, but he said, poke, and mo-poke.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, the reality is he got the answer right.
He did.
So barbecue, which would be pork.
Well, you know, you have to decide if it's going to be mustard-based, tomato-based.
But what does that mean?
Vinegar-based.
You know, cooking on a barbecue is not making barbecue, right?
No.
And you've got different styles in different parts of the South.
Right.
You have Savannah. The big ones are Savannah, North Carolina, Memphis style. And people think of the Texas stuff to do with the beef and the dry rub as barbecue, but that's a whole different. Texas is a different nation.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Southern barbecue, what's important?
It's slow cooking. It's smoking. What kind of wood are you using? And, you know, are you using what I just said, which is vinegar as a base? You know, is it going to be spicy? Is it going to be sweet? Those are the differences. You know, sometimes it's a family. You know, your family does it this way. And, you know, again, does it come down to, is it tomato-based, is it mustard-based or vinegar-based?
Well, it's literally just how you treat the pork. The pork, how you treat it, and how you cure it, how you cook it, how you smoke
right.
it.
Right, and the cure, you know, again, a cure is salt and sugar. So how much sugar are you going to put in that cure, and then what other spices are you going to add to the rub, cure, rub, whatever you want to call it.
Because barbecue is, in the South, just pork and sauce.
And how long is it cured, and how long does it get smoked, and how does it get smoked?
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about this for hours. It's
details.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's a great way of cooking inexpensive food, and that it can feed a whole lot of people. And that's what's very appealing about barbecue. And it's very soul satisfying.
Well, it's also doesn't heat up your kitchen, right?
Exactly.
That's the one thing that occurred to me that, you know, it really doesn't require much of a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it doesn't. You know, I have some construction going on. I'm renovating my kitchen in my home. And the guys took my grill off of my back, which is right outside my back door, and put it down on the ground, which is down like 20 steps outside my basement door. And I'm like, really? Are you kidding me? I use that thing all the time. And now that my kitchen's being renovated, I'm really going to need that grill. It's funny how, you know I don't want to go out there when it's 0 degrees, but I will grill anytime. It's fun. It's a great way to cook. But yeah, pit barbecue is the best. Well, now that we've talked about cooking a lot of Southern food, I think you should tell us what we should be drinking with it. So if we had sheet crab soup, what would we want to drink with that?
Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, was this a quiz show?
Yes.
So
and you've got 5 seconds to answer the question.
Sheet crab soup is a chilled, light, pretty savory sherry is going to be the right thing. So
sounds great.
I mean, that's a Manzanilla sherry, Fino sherry, something light, clean.
Well, that's
going to play off the salt and show off the sweetness of the crab.
And, of course, I put Manzanilla sherry in my soup.
Ding, next.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, seafood perlo.
Seafood perlo. What kind of seafood?
Little local fish, definitely mussels, clams, shrimp.
Tomato product?
Definitely tomato product and bacon.
Is it cold outside?
It's cold outside.
It's cold outside. Then some either Rioja, that's not a Reserva, something that's Tempranillo, not too much time in wood, that's okay. a light fresh red, from northern Spain, or Grenache from a year that's not too hot, so there's not too much alcohol. And both serve the same sort of purpose. It's a red with personality, not great density, and a certain sweetness of fruit and good balancing acidity.
All right, duck. So we're going to use Magret. You know this because I make this all the time. So, and andouille sausage gumbo with pecan rice. And you know that's got Guinness in it and definitely has a really great stock, so dark stock.
So the dish is super crazy rich.
Definitely.
There's a sweetness to the blood of the duck, for sure. Andouille has a lot of spice. You need something that's ripe, probably something that's New World, or believe it or not, some big, dense Southern Italian. Either Negromaro or Primitivo, but made in a really rich style. You could use a terrific California Zin, something that was rich.
Okay, next is fried catfish. Uh-oh.
Fried catfish with what kind of garnish?
Let's do the lemon cayenne mayonnaise and then the raw vegetables, the peppers and the onions and the green tomato.
The wine I would choose is beer.
Oh, all right. Wow.
Some really rich, cold, fresh, not too hoppy, reasonable alcohol, like a 6%er. But yeah, something cold and clean, an IPA that's not overdone.
All right, let's do one dessert. So let's say a great pecan tart.
Pecan tart is a funny one because you could do a very rich Madeira, but there's so much acidity and there's nothing to balance it. Probably, honestly, Sauterne without too much bottle aid, something that still has a lot of fruit and some of the woodsy flavor and good acidity.
Actually, let's do one more dessert because you know what Huguenot torte is, which is basically a meringue with pecans and apples in it. Yeah. And that's an easy dessert for people to make.
There's your Madeira. Madeira is probably the best dessert wine for the price, especially the 5-year-old or 10-year-old Blandy's Madeira, something like that. You want one of the relatively sweet ones like a Boal or a Malmsey. Ridiculous names, but those are...
And you could put a little bit of that. When I do Huguenot tort, I serve it with whipped cream.
Well,
so that could be in there, too.
Did I survive the quiz show?
You did. Good job.
Do I get the giant
cash
prize?
That was fun.
Good.
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the most fun and exciting part of the program. This is the producer segment, where Cindy and I highlight one of the wine growers or farmers that we work with a lot. And today we have Ian Zaletsky from Richfield Farm out in Carroll County. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing well.
Very excited you're here, Ian.
Yes.
So good to see you.
And so, and how cold is it on the farm?
About whatever the temperature here in Baltimore is, it's usually about 10 degrees less. So it's been right around zero now for a good week.
What does that do anything positively for the land? That
I think a lot of times it will help next year's insect population.
You mean help it go away?
Yes, we won't have quite as many nuisance insects. Also, I think it helps kill some of the disease that's present in the soil.
That's good.
So hopefully we'll have a less pressure next year, which will then translate into less pesticide use.
Very good.
Which is good.
Mm-hmm. So just briefly for listeners, tell us about Richfield Farm, where it is, and how you got started and... essentially what kind of stuff you grow.
Richfield Farm is in Manchester, Carroll County. My father bought the farm in 1985, and I periodically worked there all through high school. And after graduating from college, I came back to the farm full-time and basically took over full-time operation. And within the last 5 years, I really pretty much ran the farm full-time.
So sort of the opposite of what people think of is the more recent American farm story where the kids grow up, go to college, and then never come back.
Yeah, I did the opposite.
We're glad you did, Ian.
The lifestyle is appealing.
Oh, you grow some great, great things for us. And I mean, as a chef, it's the greatest pleasure in the world to work with things that just came out of the ground that have been grown by you and the other local farmers. And it's just such a joy to work with your products. So thank you so much.
Oh, the flavors are much better.
It's so amazing. Yeah. Even a zucchini that you think of as a kind of an everyday kind of thing can be brilliant when it's right out of the ground.
Very much.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, one that's 3 weeks old has been trucked across the country that's wrapped in plastic. Doesn't have a whole lot of personality by the time it gets cooked.
No, it's all about, they all taste about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like the plastic than like the soil where they're grown. So what sort of stuff do you guys grow?
Currently we grow just about any vegetable that you can think of, from zucchinis and squash, string beans and eggplants and peppers. We also grow sweet corn, pumpkins, fall squash, like butternuts.
Is there some product that makes the season profitable and terrific? Is there some product that's the big pride of what you do? Is there some product that's your killer?
Pretty much, if the tomato season is a good season, that determines whether you have a good year or not.
That's interesting.
If you have the good tasting tomatoes, you have good yielding tomatoes, that determines how your year is going to be.
The heirlooms.
Heirlooms, yep. And cherries and
good.
Everything like that, yes.
So what's the best recent vintage of of tomatoes from you guys?
Do you think? Definitely last year wasn't the best.
And why? Was it because of the rainfall?
It was so cool in the spring,
right.
And it set everything back, and mm-hmm. then we had rains, and then it got dry. And actually, the best tomatoes last year were like in September and October.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, that's, I mean, how long have we been doing stuff? You know, 15 years or something? I mean, that's the first time. Yeah, it's used the second week of August, best tomatoes of the year.
Yeah, we're all preparing for taking it off the menu. And
this year it was like the first week of October.
Exactly.
Because it was the most amount of sunlight and the driest period. And it was, but people were out of tomato mode by then.
Right.
So it's an odd,
they're not used to it.
Yeah.
Or not trusting it, maybe.
What's the crop that you tried to grow that you just never made a nickel on, but you kept trying?
Crop that I've never made a nickel on, but I keep growing anyways. Artichokes.
is that your holy grail vegetable?
No, because I don't really like to pick them because they're so thorny.
Right. They're mean. Artichokes are mean.
Yes.
Was always the torture when I was a kid working at the Governor's Club in the kitchen was if you irritated the chef, make you tourne artichokes.
Well, it's not easy to work with artichokes in the kitchen either. You need to have a darn good sharp knife to clean up an artichoke.
And the first time we ever picked artichokes was I had to get them picked for market. And it was dark, and I had my father go out and sit in his Jeep with the lights on, shining down the road, and I picked them at night. And I didn't realize they had so many thorns because it was our first picking ever.
Okay, now that was mean.
Yeah, that was bad. But
I don't know if the word is mean or
comical.
Unstudied, let's say.
Yes. Probably the other vegetables probably, or fruit, or is probably raspberries. I continue to grow them every year, but you really don't ever make any money on them.
Well, you should just eat them then.
They're very pricey, so when you do sell them, you think you're making a lot of money, but then when you turn around and clean the vines up in the fall, the amount of labor that goes into cleaning the vines out doesn't equal what you've paid, at least so far for me.
I understand.
So what is the biggest work month of the year?
Probably I'd say the month of May and June are about equal in getting things worked in the field, planted. And meanwhile, you're trying to harvest some of your early crops to go to market. So it gets quite confusing because you have to get things in. You have to get things out of the field to go to market.
Sure.
Plus, you have to get other fields worked up and ready to plant in the future. So you have kind of like three different things going on at the same time.
Have you guys taken... How is your philosophy towards what you do use or don't use to keep disease down, or to, you know, to? I'm assuming Carroll County is pretty rare that you ever have to irrigate anything.
I'm just curious about
the evolution of how you guys farm.
We do irrigate, mostly through trickle irrigation, but my irrigation system is sort of designed to keep vegetables alive instead of producing a crop, whereas some of the, you know, larger farmers can irrigate, you know, and actually can do it every day and produce a crop from it. If I had to do that, it would really, really hurt my bottom line because it costs me a lot of money to irrigate.
Sure.
And it's a lot of time and a lot of lost time that I wouldn't be spending on other things.
Mm-hmm.
So we do irrigate when we have to, but I really hate to.
You said about the lifestyle. Lifestyle was appealing, which is why you wanted to go back to farming. What's the upside of farming? What's the difficult part? I'm assuming the net of the lifestyle, you're pleased with your choice.
Yeah, overall, it's very, very satisfying. You work extremely long hours for 6 months of the year, and 3 or 4 months of the year you work sort of average hours, and then, you know, you have some time to yourself for another month and a half or 2 months, which you can, you know, use to unplug, unravel if you have to, vacation, see your family.
Exactly. Good.
Probably something like a professional baseball player's schedule.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. We're a NASCAR driver or something like that, yeah.
Would you say any of the products that you grow are typically Southern?
I guess some of the things we grow would be typically Southern. Okra. Mm-hmm. Okra's typically Southern, and
well, you grow amazing beans. I mean, that's
the beans, yeah. But most of those, I wouldn't consider really Southern.
Hmm. Would your wife consider you really Southern?
Yes, she would consider me very Southern, and the beans very Southern, especially the way we cook them.
That's because she's from Connecticut.
With salt and yeah. My beans are always too salty for my wife.
Well, all you really need in there is a little bit of pork product.
Yes, well, right? That's still too salty
for her. Okay. Inherently
salty. She likes her steam so they look like they're still fresh.
Definitely not Southern.
No.
So thanks for coming in after, during your hibernating season.
Yes, right. Yes.
So tell us, or tell listeners really, when you go to market in the area, what markets do you typically attend?
Currently, we are attending the Baltimore City Farmers Market on Sundays. We're at the Towson Farmers Market on Thursdays. And we do two markets on Saturday, one at Mount Pleasant and one at H and 13th Street in Washington. And we're also in another market on Sunday in Washington at Columbia Market, I think. It's an indoor market.
Okay.
Good. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
It's good to see you.
Yes.
It's been too long since we saw you the last time.
I haven't been down to the restaurants
really
in a while.
You really have been hibernating. Yeah.
We'll see you in the spring.
Yes. Right.
Thank
very
you so
shortly.
Much. Appreciate your work, Ian.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that was our producer segment for this week. Thanks so much for joining us on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine and our discussion of Southern food and Cindy's little quickie wine quiz show. And please send us questions via email to foremanwolf@wypr.org. Email questions, please, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we're happy to address those on the next segment of Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.